I don't worry whenever skies are gray above. Got a pocket full of rainbows, got a heart full of love. Mr. Heartache, I found a way to make him leave. Got a pocket full of rainbows, got a star up my sleeve.
Well, hello everybody, this is Mark Chaffardini. Welcome back to the Go See Talk podcast experience. We are live outdoors in a wonderfully peaceful setting in the backyard of Go See Talk headquarters. So enjoying a very delicious libation, a peanut butter flavored whiskey. And you know, the king has some very peculiar tastes and hobbies. One of them was a peanut butter banana bacon sandwich, and somehow that doesn't sound as bad as what I'm drinking, so maybe I should take a cue and do exactly what he did. Anyway, we're glad to have you back. The crows are chirping, the cicadas are doing what they need to, and I am joined by a very special guest, Mrs. Go See Talk. We'd like to introduce Hala Chaffardini to the show. Hala, thank you for being in the backyard in our house. How are you?
I'm great, thank you for having me here.
Well, it was very apropos. I'm bringing Mrs. Go See Talk out of the house and onto stage because we saw Elvis, Baz Luhrmann's biopic about the king of rock and roll. And we saw it on Tuesday, loved it every single minute of 2 hours and 39 minutes. But Mrs. Go See Talk, Hala, happens to be the biggest Elvis fan I know. So before we get into the movie and all the visual symphony of editing and wonderful set design, let's get to know this guest, this woman who I call my my co-pilot. Hala, what was the first album? What was the first Elvis song? What were the first memories of the king that you have?
I'd have to say it's growing up with my mom, who was an adamant Elvis fan herself, and she had all of his records from throughout his whole entire career. And so I grew up listening to all of his records. We watched his movies when they came on in January and August, and we just fell in love with his personality and his charisma. I'd also like to say that my life parallels his in some sort of fashion, not in the same order anyway, but you know, I was born in Las Vegas, Nevada, and that's where he did the majority of his shows at the end of his career. And then we moved to Jackson, Tennessee, right an hour outside of Memphis. And so we went to Memphis all the time down the Graceland. And then I went to college in Starkville, Mississippi, an hour outside of Tupelo. And so it's like I kind of followed his career path, just not in the right order.
Yeah, and for those of you who don't know, if Elvis sounds like a very foreign name to you, let's just give you a small bit of history. Elvis Aaron Presley was born on January 8, 1935, in a small house in Tupelo, Mississippi. He eventually captured the hearts and souls of millions worldwide through his music, his personality, and of course, his clam bake. Now, in all jest and seriousness, Elvis has, you know, he casts a wide shadow, and he's been influential for being able to create such a hybrid of music, gospel, and African-American music of the South, and gave it a pathway to people's ears. Sun Records, I mean, he's you know, his, you couldn't put enough of Elvis's story into this movie that we're about to talk about, but they really tried their hardest. Now, Hala, as somebody who has grown up with this, you know, you said your mom had a lot of records. What are some of her favorite records?
I would probably have to say G.I. Blues. The soundtrack to the movie is probably one of her favorites. It's the one we always dance to in the living room. And it's still one of my favorites to this day. It's happy music and it makes you want to dance.
Okay. A doo-wop shop in the Ferguson household. Well, I led off the show with Pocket Full of Rainbows because that is one that Hala introduced me to, because I have been
from
G.I. Blues. And I've seen very few Elvis movies except for the random bits and pieces here on TV. And some way, I think the universe is taunting me. We always find our way to clam bake. It always just comes in our TV or vernacular, and it's kind of a joke in our household. Mm-hmm. So, continuing with the King of Rock and Roll and maybe some things you don't know about Elvis. Elvis got his first guitar when he was 11. We did a little quiz the other day and learned a whole lot about the King of Rock and Roll. Do you remember some of the other tidbit pieces?
I remember the question about his army number that was on his uniform, and that stumped me. Like, who would remember that? Yeah.
Well, he went from fighting with guns and shaved sides of his heads to fighting like they do in the East, as in the Eastern part of the world. He was a seventh degree black belt mm-hmm. holder. He even started the Tennessee Karate Institute. So in addition to an appetite for some really wild things like monkey bread, not even sure what that is. Mm-hmm. I don't want to try it, but we're happy to just follow this guy pretty much anywhere he goes. Let's see. Yeah, I think that about rounds out the trivia. You can go down so many rabbit holes, but it was fun just to learn a little bit more about this wonderfully good-looking man from Tupelo, Mississippi, where the honey just kind of falls off your lips like that. Maybe that's a different state.
That vernacular. Might be Georgia.
Yeah. My experience in the South is very limited. Well, why don't we take a quick dive into the movie?
Are you born with destiny? Or does it just come knocking at your door?
He's a young singer from Memphis, Tennessee. Give him a warm hayride welcome. Mr. Elvis Presley.
Get a haircut, buttercup.
In that moment, I watched that skinny boy transform into a superhero. He was my destiny.
I wish to promote you, Mr. Presley.
One room party in the county jail.
Are you ready to fly?
I'm ready. Ready to fly.
Tomorrow, all of America will be talking about Elvis Presley.
President,
I can't move. I can't sing. Some people wanted to put me in jail as well as moving.
They might put me in jail for walking across the street, but you're a famous white boy.
The way you sing is God-given, so there can't be nothing wrong with it.
As we let off, the movie is 2 hours, 39 minutes, and Hala, lifelong Elvis fan, there's been a lot of Elvis movies. What were some of your initial thoughts? How do you feel?
Well, I thought it was a little odd in the beginning, the way they tried to tell the story of him as a little boy and then leaving Tupelo, going to Memphis, kind of just with almost like cartoon type verbiage on the screen. It was just a little odd. It's a little different than what I thought the Elvis movie was going to be. I thought it was going to be a little bit more traditional. But as it went on, I found that I kind of liked how they reinterpreted his story, because his story has been told so many times through so many ways. And I like that they almost tried to make it, or they did make it relevant to this generation that we're in. You know, he passed away in 1977, a very long time ago. And there's several generations who never knew him or got to experience him. So this movie is going to bring a fresh new light. And in a way, it just keeps Elvis alive.
I agree completely. And I think what you picked up on is something I gravitated to immediately, the cinematography. That was just something that the movie was very nonlinear, and it does include a big person in his life, Colonel Tom Parker, that I had no awareness of. And this made the movie almost like a duel between the two of them. Tom Parker was a quote unquote snowman, a carnival guy who's used to taking money from the wallets of rubes. I think that's a 30s vernacular, but he's used to getting his way and being manipulative, and you know, he had a whole lot of resources. And so this was not a movie about Elvis losing his twin brother as a child and just following a very linear story. It even starts with the Colonel. And that was a big sort of eye opener for someone who's not a big Elvis fan. And I did appreciate the way they took it. It did get a little fuzzy after a while, the non-linear storytelling, jumping. And as Hala said, you'd see Elvis who when he was young, thought he was a superhero. So you'd see a comic strip on this flash up on the screen, or the way that they would, and he would be the hero in that comic strip, or when it transitioned to Beale Street, you'd see a postcard and it used this different mediums of the day, a newspaper print, stock footage from the 50s. So things like that was actually a narrative pathway from one segment of the movie to the other. And you got to give that to Baz Luhrmann. I mean, he and his production team he gives you a visual feast that goes along with the narrative feast and the music, because you can't have a movie with just Elvis singing songs.
Yeah. So. Well, and you hit on something that you just said about how they would use real edits from whatever, all his concerts or even his personal life. They would use clips from old stock photos or videos. And I thought that was neat. I thought that brought in a personal touch, and I like how they integrated the old with the new.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think there was something that Hala said that I thought about halfway through the movie. I was wondering, I'm a big Sinatra fan, as big of and as an Elvis fan that Hala is, I'm equally taken with old Blue Eyes. And I just had so many questions wondering, are people these days going to get and care about Elvis who weren't fans? You know, I mean, if you've got a built-in audience, people are going to see anything with Presley's name on it. But I just wondered what the draw was. And I have to say that even if you know one song, the movie does a really good job of sucking you into what his world was, mm-hmm. but not in a way that makes it all about the genesis of a song or why he felt a certain way. It was these interactions with people in his life, and mostly between him and the Colonel. So it was that tension that kind of made the movie so impacting. But on that note, I mean, the two biggest stars of the movie headline this, Austin Butler playing the titular King of Rock and Roll, and Tom Hanks as the Colonel Tom Parker. Now, Hala, what did you think about those two casting choices, and how did they do?
Well, I thought they did phenomenal. Now, I don't envy Tom Hanks for sitting in that makeup chair for however long it took for them to make him into Colonel Tom Parker. But no, in all seriousness, when you're watching Austin perform as Elvis, you almost feel like Elvis left heaven for a moment in time, came into Austin's body and performed as he would here on Earth. Like, it was that real.
Yeah.
So I think they did both a phenomenal job portraying those people.
And Austin, I mean, aside from having some huge elevator shoes, I don't know what Elvis wears, but shoes to fill.
Blue suede shoes.
How did I miss that? I'd like to apologize to all the Go See Talk fans. Thank you, Hala, for snapping me back. I think that, Austin Butler, there's certain times in the movie where, like Hala said, it felt like you were watching the legitimate DNA of the king throwing himself around on stage, from songs like I'm Evil to any of his larger than life Vegas shows. Mm-hmm. It was a sight to behold. Now, it's not like you can just stand there and sing. It's not like if they'd made a Michael Bublé or a Harry Connick Jr. Biopic, you'd basically have a crooner who's not as animated as Elvis. And there were some scenes where in his famous white outfit with
the jumpsuit,
with the 6-inch collar,
cape,
and he would sort of shake his fists and body, and like, oh, it was, to bring that kind of animation to the film, it's what it needed. And so that's why I think, yes, I agree. Perfect casting choice. Even though, a lot like Pennywise in the It movies, the character looks nothing like the actor playing it, and vice versa. When you see Austin Butler without his hair done and the makeup, you would almost be surprised that it's the same person.
I mean, he is still gorgeous, though.
My wife, everybody. Drink some more of the, actually, you need less of the peanut butter whiskey. But the funny thing, As much as I was curious if audiences were going to get this film, I had more of a question about Tom Hanks's role. All I kept thinking is, what the hell is Tom Hanks doing in this movie? You know, he is a phenomenal actor. He's a national treasure. He's probably one of the greatest American actors we have living. But I honestly feel that his role could have been played by anybody, from David Schwimmer to Idris Elba.
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm surprised that Nicolas Cage didn't go after that role, because he is such an adamant Elvis fan that he actually married Lisa Marie.
Another fun fact I forgot. Thank you, Mrs. Go See Talk.
You're welcome.
Do you have any more fun facts you want to roll off?
Well, one, I was thinking about when you were talking about old Blue Eyes himself. During the film G.I. Blues, the lead actress in that, it was rumored that Elvis was having a little side-on-side fling with her while they were on set, and she was actually Sinatra's girlfriend at the time. We may never know.
Yeah. Well, you know, even the little boy from Hackensack, New Jersey can't hold a candle to the king of rock and roll.
That's true.
What the king wants, the king gonna get. and the cast kind of goes down from there, because a lot of people, unless you are very versed in Australian cinema, you're probably going to miss a lot of high-profile Australian actors like Richard Roxburgh or David Wenham, or even, if you're a Stranger Things fan, Darce Montgomery, who played Billy in season 2 and 3. And, you know, more to that point, Baz Luhrmann keeps a very tight knit with the Australian film community. Everything from the composer, Elliot Wheeler, to the set decorators and production designers. He keeps a close ship. I mean, Catherine Martin and Karen Murphy did an absolutely phenomenal job. Now, Hala, both my wife and I are in the design community. So even though we don't do clothing, we work for hotel ownership groups and architects and interior design. We're in that world. We still care about how things look, the touch and feel. So even though this wasn't a hotel room or a restaurant, what did you think about the visuals and the outfits and the production design?
Well, nothing beats the jungle room at Graceland.
Which they didn't show, but go on.
No, I think they did a really awesome job at it. When I was sitting there, I was thinking, you know, they didn't really ever say the Hilton International, which is where Elvis performed for like 5 or 6 years in a row. I don't know if that's because they would have had to pay royalty to Hilton. I thought that was interesting. And then you and I actually went to the Hilton International when we were in Vegas.
I remember that.
For
the day we left, movie. Right?
Yeah. And they have a statue of Elvis outside. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of neat.
Well, I really liked the fact that the movie, even though it was nearly 3 hours, it didn't feel like that.
Right.
And it's because of the sort of rapid fire editing. I mean, the great thing about
the energy.
You want to speak a little more to that? Okay. I'm getting a head shake, people. but no, I mean, it does feel 3 hours. I remember there was a guy who sat in a row in front of me, and I saw his Apple Watch light up, and what seemed like easily 2 hours was, you know, when his watch lit up, it was 1 hour and 17 minutes. And it does feel every bit of that, just because this is such a jam-packed roller coaster ride. And, you know, the editing is so fast. There's not that many places where the movie breathes. And I think that's unfortunate, because they put so much effort into making it feel legitimate. Like, this is a time machine, Baz Luhrmann's Australian time machine. The production design is out of this world. And I can't imagine how much time and money and energy was spent bringing this to life, but you see things cut at almost a millisecond pace. And it, you know, it's on par with what I would say a Guillermo del Toro film, but mostly in the daytime, and you just don't get enough time to just behold it. So I think this is going to be a treat on the back end, on the DVD, Blu-ray, you ultra high definition disc market, where people can actually pause and enjoy it. I think Hala hit on something that was important by not paying respect to, or not maybe not paying for the Marriott or the Hilton logo. There were some things left out, maybe some things that fans were looking forward to. They didn't go through this like his greatest hits. The selection of music was not, you know, it's probably enough to fill an album, but it wasn't overblown with music selection. So there were some pretty well-known Elvis things that didn't make the cut. So maybe, Hala, do you have any songs that you regret not hearing or noticed that were like, why wouldn't that be in the movie?
Well, coming from little old Jackson, Tennessee, I think we are all fans of Blue Suede Shoes, who was, it was written by Carl Perkins, who lived in Jackson, Tennessee, and he was a famous musician who lived there. And every time I'd drive by his house when I was in high school, I'd get all like excited because he was the closest thing to Elvis that I would ever get to. So yeah, I was a little disappointed we didn't get to hear some Blue Suede Shoes. But I think we did get to hear Lonesome, Are You Lonesome Tonight?
Yeah.
Towards the end. And that's always been kind of a more sentimental song and kind of spoke to home. And it's always good to hear that one.
And the way they put that in the movie was actually kind of nice. He played it at a piano in his penthouse suite at the International. It wasn't even a performance. It was just him sort of being sad, and it was actually relative and played pretty closely to what the events were happening in the film. His wife leaving him and taking his daughter, Lisa Marie. You know, I have to say that I wasn't a fan or wasn't taken with the first half or third, but the movie for me really got exciting when Elvis had his quote unquote comeback special, because there's more to the story than people know. And even if half of that's true, it's still an amazing thing to watch. And I think that's a really standout piece in the film, as are all of his Vegas numbers. So, I mean, if you somehow miss seeing Elvis in your life, this is probably the closest thing you'll get to it. And, we really hope you enjoy it. So, Hala, what are some of your favorite parts?
I will have to agree with you. The comeback special, that was something that I personally didn't know the double layer about of the Colonel wanting to do a Christmas special. And he really was adamant about Elvis wearing this Christmas sweater and singing Nothing But Silent Night and Away in a Manger. And Elvis had other plans. And so I never knew that. And I thought that was kind of neat how they literally had the camera set up to this Christmas scene with Santa Claus and his sleigh. And at the last minute of the last part of his comeback, if you've seen that, with the red lit Elvis sign in the background, he's in his white suit. Yeah. Yeah. And then they literally turn the camera around to that stage. And the Colonel is just freaking out that this Christmas special is not happening. So I thought that was kind of a little something that I didn't know about in his life. And then one more special part of the movie was at the very end. And I thought this was brilliant on the director's part or the whoever came up with this, but they have Austin Butler sitting there playing his last concert in 1977. And they somehow, through the magic of the camera, morphed from Austin's face, made up as Elvis, into the real live footage of Elvis playing at that concert. And I think almost everybody in the theater got a little teary-eyed at that moment, knowing that that was his probably last song of his last concert that he would ever sing. So that was a special moment.
I think that's a good one to end it on. We were going to go into takeaways, but that is your takeaway is your favorite bit. So that's a brilliant one. What I did want to just end up on is Elvis is known for a variety of things, outstanding music, fashion, passion for his friends. You know, he created the Memphis Mafia.
Gift giving. Oh my gosh. Yeah. He would just give Cadillacs away like they were $5 bills. Mm-hmm.
And you know, he, and there's still a lot of things that are not known about him. And thanks to the internet, we're able to learn some things. And, you know, Elvis was very big in the gospel. He was very spiritual. He had some great original songs, but a lot of covers. And I think that as sort of a newbie in the world of Elvis, I'm like many people, were probably mistaken that songs that he made famous were his songs. I'm just gonna run through a couple of these for you real quick. Suspicious Minds is actually sung by Mark James. It was written a year before he made it a number one hit. As Hala said, Blue Suede Shoes was a Carl Perkins song. Hound Dog is by Willie Big Mama Thornton. Are You Lonesome Tonight? Great Elvis song. Not an Elvis song. It's from Charles Hart. Crying in the Chapel. Always on My Mind is a really popular one by Brenda Lee. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. There's really nothing wrong with that. So I think that about does it for us in this review. It's pretty much all positive. I'd say 99.999 peanut butter, banana, and bacon sandwich percent. So we will see you next time, friends. But before we go, we do have a little bit more Elvis information for you. The next podcast that I'll be doing is with the composer, Elliot Wheeler, who worked on, he did the temp music for Mad Max Fury Road. He's worked with Baz Luhrmann so much. He's a fantastic musician in his own right. And so we'd love to talk to him about his experience on this mind-blowing film. So thank you so much for joining us. Hala, thank you for living here.
My pleasure.
All right, everybody. Thanks for your time.
Elvis has left the building.